if he allowed it. Dagmar Clefjaw stood by the high-carved prow of his longship, Foam Drinker. Theon had assigned him the task of guarding the ships. Otherwise, men would have called it Dagmar's victory, not his. A more prickly man might have taken that for a slight, but the Clefjaw had only laughed. "The day is won," Dagmar called down, "and yet you do not smile, boy. The living should smile, for the dead cannot." He smiled himself to show how it was done. It made for a hideous sight. Under a snowy white mane of hair, Dagmar Clefjaw had the most gut-churning scar Theon had ever seen, the legacy of the long axe that had near killed him as a boy. The blow had splintered his jaw, shattered his front teeth, and left him four lips, where other men had but two. A shaggy beard covered his cheeks and neck, but the hair would not grow over the scar, so a shiny seam of puckered, twisted flesh divided his face like a crevasse through a snowfield.
"We could hear them singing," the old warrior said. "It was a good song, and they sang it bravely."
"They sang better than they fought. Harps would have done them as much good as their lances did."
"How many men are lost?"
"Of ours?" Theon shrugged. "Todrick. I killed him for getting drunk and fighting over loot."
"Some men are born to be killed."
A lesser man might have been afraid to show a smile as frightening as his. Yet Dagmar grinned more often and more broadly than Lord Balon ever had. Ugly as it was, that smile brought back 100 memories. Theon had seen it often as a boy, when he'd jumped a horse over a mossy wall, or flung an axe and split a target square. He'd seen it when he'd blocked a blow from Dagmar's sword, when he put an arrow through a seagull on the wing, when he took the tiller in hand and guided a longship safely through a snarl of foaming rocks. He gave me more smiles than my father and Eddard Stark together. Even Rob. He ought to have won a smile the day he'd saved Bran from that wildling, but instead he'd gotten a scolding, as if he were some cook who'd burned the stew. "You and I must talk, uncle," Theon said. Dagmar was no true uncle, only a sworn man with perhaps a pinch of Greyjoy blood 4 or 5 lives back, and that from the wrong side of the blanket. Yet Theon had always called him uncle nonetheless.
"Come into my deck, then."
There were no milords from Dagmar, not when he stood on his own deck. On the Iron Islands, every captain was a king aboard his own ship. He climbed the plank to the deck of the Foam Drinker in 4 long strides, and Dagmar led him back to the cramped aft cabin, where the old man poured a horn of sour ale and offered Theon the same. He declined. "We did not capture enough horses. A few, but, well, I'll make do with what I have, I suppose. Fewer men means more glory."
"What need do we have of horses?"
Like most iron men, Dagmar preferred to fight on foot or from the deck of a ship.
"Horses will only shit on our decks and get in our way."
"If we sailed, yes," Theon admitted. "I have another plan." He watched the other carefully to see how he would take that. Without the Clefjaw, he could not hope to succeed. Command or no, the men would never follow him if both Aaron and Dagmar opposed him, and he had no hope of winning over the sour-faced priest.
"Your lord father commanded us to harry the coast, no more."
Eyes pale as sea foam watched Theon from under those shaggy white eyebrows. Was it disapproval he saw there, or a spark of interest? The latter, he thought, hoped. "You are my father's man."
"He's best man, and always have been."
Pride, Theon thought. He is proud. I must use that. His pride will be the key. "There is no man in the Iron Islands half so skilled with spear or sword."
"You have been too long away, boy. When you left, it was, as you say, but I'm grown old in Lord Greyjoy's service. The singers call Andric best now. Andric the Unsmiling, they name him. A giant of a man. He serves Lord Drum of Ulwick, and Black Lauren and Carl the Maid are near as dread. This Andric may be a great fighter, but men do not fear him as they fear you.
Aye, that's so, Dagmar said.
The fingers curled around the drinking horn were heavy with rings, gold and silver and bronze, set with chunks of sapphire and garnet and dragon glass. He had paid the iron price for every one, Theon knew. If I had a man like you in my service, I should not waste him on this child's business of harrying and burning. This is no work for Lord Balon's best man.
Dagmar's grin twisted his lips apart and showed the brown splinters of his teeth.
Nor for his true-born son? He hooted. I know you too well, Theon. I saw you take your first step, helped you bend your first bow. 'Tis not me who feels wasted.
By rights, I should have my sister's command, he admitted, uncomfortably aware of how peevish that sounded.
You take this business to our boy. It is only that your lord father does not know you. With your brothers dead and you taken by the wolves, your sister was his solace. He learned to rely on her, and she has never failed him.
Nor have I. The Starks knew my worth. I was one of Brynden Blackfish's picked scouts, and I charged with the first wave in the Whispering Wood. I was that close to crossing swords with the Kingslayer himself. Theon held his hands 2 feet apart. Darren Ornwood came between us and died for it.
Why'd you tell me this?
Dagmar asked.
It was me who put your first sword in your hand. I know you're no craven.
Does my father? The hoary old warrior looked as if he'd bitten into something he did not like the taste of.
It is only Theon, the boy wolf, is your friend, and these Starks had you for 10 years.
I am no Stark.
Lord Iddard thought of that. I'm a Greyjoy, and I mean to be my father's heir. How can I do that unless I prove myself with some great deed? You are young. Other wars will come, and you shall do your great deeds. For now, we are commanded to harry the stony shore.
Let my uncle Aaron see to it. I'll give him 6 ships, all but Foam Drinker and Sea Bitch, and he can burn and drown to his guard's surfeit.
The command was given you, not Aaron Damphair.
So long as the harrying is done, what does it matter? No priest could do what I mean to, nor what I ask of you. I have a task that only Dagmar Cleftjaw can accomplish. Dagmar took a long draught from his horn.
Tell me.
He is tempted, Theon thought. He likes this reaver's work no better than I do. If my sister can take a castle, so can I.
Asher has 4 or 5 times the men we do.
Theon allowed himself a sly smile. But we have 4 times the wits and 5 times the courage.
Your father
will thank me when I hand him his kingdom. I mean to do a deed that the harpers will sing of for 1,000 years.
He knew that would give Dagmar pause. A singer had made a song about the axe that cracked his jaw in half, and the old man loved to hear it. Whenever he was in his cups, he would call for a reaving song, something loud and stormy that told of dead heroes and deeds of wild valour.
His hair is white, and his teeth are rotten, but he still has a taste for glory.
What would my part be in this scheme of yours, boy?
Dagmar Cleftjaw asked after a long silence. And Theon knew he had won.
To strike terror into the heart of the foe, as only one of your name could do. You take the great part of our force and march on Torrin Square. Elman Torlart took his best men south, and Benfred died here with their sons. His uncle Leobold will remain with some small garrison. If I'd been able to question Benfred, I would know just how small. Make no secret of your approach. Sing all the brave songs you like. I want them to close their gates.
Is this Torrin Square a strong keep?
Strong enough. The walls are stone, 30 feet high, with square towers at each corner and a square keep within.
Stone walls cannot be fired. How are we to take them? We do not have the numbers to storm even a small castle.
You will make camp outside their walls and set to building catapults and siege engines.
That is not the old way. Have you forgotten? Iron men fight with swords and axes, not by flinging rocks. There is no glory in starving out a foeman.
Leopold will not know that. When he sees you raising siege towers, his old woman's blood will run cold, and he will bleat for help. Stay your archers, uncle, and let the raven fly. The castellan at Winterfell is a brave man, but age has stiffened his wits as well as his limbs. When he learns that one of his king's bannermen is under attack by the fearsome Dagmar Cleftjaw, he will summon his strength and ride to Tallarch's aid. It is his duty. Sir Roderick is nothing if not dutiful.
Any force he summons will be larger than mine, Dagmar said, and these old knights are more cunning than you think, or they would never have lived to see their first grey hair. You set us a battle we cannot hope to win, Theon. This Turin Square will never fall.
Theon smiled. It's not Turin Square I mean to take. Arya. Confusion and clangor ruled the castle. Men stood on the beds of wagons, loading casks of wine, sacks of flour, and bundles of new-fletched arrows. Smiths straightened swords, knocked dents from breastplates, and shooed destriers and pack mules alike. Mail shirts were tossed in barrels of sand and rolled across the lumpy surface of the flowstone yard to scour them clean. Weezer's women had 20 cloaks to mend, 100 more to wash. The high and humble crowded into the sept together to pray. Outside the walls, tents and pavilions were coming down. Squires tossed pails of water over cook fires, while soldiers took out their oil stones to give their blades one last good lick. The noise was a swelling tide, horses blowing and whickering, lords shouting commands, men-at-arms trading curses, camp followers squabbling. Lord Tywin Lannister was marching at last. Sir Adam Marbrand was the first of the captains to depart, a day before the rest. He made a gallant show of it, riding a spirited red courser whose mane was the same copper colour as the long hair that streamed past Sir Adam's shoulders. The horse was barded in bronze-coloured trappings, dyed to match the rider's cloak and emblazoned with a burning tree. Some of the castle women sobbed to see him go. We said he was a great horseman and sword-fighter, Lord Tywin's most daring commander.
I hope he dies, Arya thought as she watched him ride out of the gate, his men streaming after him in a double column. I hope they all die.
They were going to fight Rob, she knew. Listening to the talk as she went about her work, Arya had learned that Rob had won some great victory in the West. He'd burned Lannisport, some said, or else he meant to burn it. He'd captured Castle Rock and put everyone to the sword, or he was besieging the Golden Tooth. But something had happened. That much was certain. Whis had her running messages from dawn to dusk. Some of them even took her beyond the castle walls, out into the mud and madness of the camp. I could flee, she thought, as a wagon rumbled past her. I could hop on the back of a wagon and hide, or fall in with the camp followers. No one would stop me. She might have done it, if not for Whis. He'd told them more than once what he'd do to anyone who tried to run off on him.
It won't be no beating, oh no. I won't lay a finger on you. I'll just save you for the cohort, yes I will. I'll save you for the crippler. Vargo Holt his name is, and when he gets back, he'll cut off your feet.
Maybe if Whis were dead, Arya thought, but not when she was with him. He could look at you and smell what you were thinking. He always said so. Whis never imagined she could read, though,
so he never bothered to seal the messages he gave her. Arya peeked at them all, but they were never anything good, just stupid stuff, sending this cart to the granary and that one to the armory. One was a demand for payment on a gambling debt, but the knight she gave it to couldn't read. When she told him what it said, he tried to hit her, but Arya ducked under the blow, snatched a silver-banded drinking horn off his saddle, and darted away. The knight roared and came after her, but she slid between two wains, wove through a crowd of archers, and jumped a latrine trench. In his mail, he couldn't keep up. When she gave the horn to Wheeze, he told her that a smart little weasel like her deserved a reward.
"I've got my eye on a plump, crisp capon to sup on tonight. We'll share it, you and me. You'd like that."
Everywhere she went, Arya searched for Jake and Hagar, wanting to whisper another name to him before those she hated were all gone out of her reach. But amidst the chaos and confusion, the Larathi sellsword was not to be found. He still owed her two deaths, and she was worried she would never get them if he rode off to battle with the rest. Finally, she worked up the courage to ask one of the gate guards if he'd gone.
"One of Lork's men, is he?"
the man said.
"He won't be going, then. His lordship's name's Sir Aimery Castellan of Arranal. That lot's staying right here to all the castle. The bloody mummers will be left as well to do the foraging. That goat, Vargo Holt, is like to spit. Him and Lorch have always hated each other."
The mountain would be leaving with Lord Tywin, though. He would command the van in battle, which meant that Dunsan, Polliver, and Raff would all slip between her fingers unless she could find Jaqen and have him kill one of them before they left.
"Weasel,"
Wheeze said that afternoon,
"get to the armory and tell Lucan that Sir Lionel notched his sword in practice and needs a new one. Here's his mark."
He handed her a square of paper.
"Be quick about it now. He's to ride with Sir Kevin Lannister."
Arya took the paper and ran. The armory adjoined the castle smithy, a long, high-roofed tunnel of a building, with 20 forges built into its walls, and long stone water troughs for tempering the steel. Half of the forges were at work when she entered. The walls rang with the sound of hammers, and burly men in leather aprons stood sweating in the sullen heat as they bent over bellows and anvils. When she espied Gendry, his bare chest was slick with sweat, but the blue eyes under the heavy black hair had the stubborn look she remembered. Arya didn't know that she even wanted to talk to him. It was his fault they'd all been caught. "Which one is Lucan?" She thrust out the paper. "I'm to get a new sword for Sir Lionel."
"Never mind about Sir Lionel." He drew her aside by the arm. "Last night, Hot Pie asked me if I'd heard you yell Winterfell back at the Holdfast when we were all fighting on the wall."
"I never did."
"Yes, you did. I heard you too."
"Everyone was yelling stuff," Arya said defensively. "Hot Pie yelled Hot Pie. He must have yelled it 100 times.
"It's what you yell that matters. I told Hot Pie he should clean the wax out of his ears, that all you yelled was, 'Go to hell!' If he asks you, you better say the same."
"I will," she said, even though she thought 'go to hell' was a stupid thing to yell. She didn't dare tell Hot Pie who she really was. "Maybe I should say Hot Pie's name to Jaqen."
"I'll get Lucan," Gendry said.
Lucan grunted at the writing, though Arya did not think he could read it, and pulled down a heavy longsword.
"This is too good for that oath. And you tell him I said so," he said as he gave her the blade.
"I will," she lied. If she did any such thing, Wheeze would beat her bloody. Lucan could deliver his own insults. The longsword was a lot heavier than Needle had been, but Arya liked the feel of it. The weight of steel in her hands made her feel stronger. "Maybe I'm not a water dancer yet, but I'm not a mouse either. A mouse couldn't use a sword, but I can." The gates were open. Soldiers were coming and going, drays rolling in empty and going out, creaking and swaying under their loads. She thought about going to the stables and telling them that Sir Lionel wanted a new horse. She had the paper. The stable boys wouldn't be able to read it any better than Lucan had. I could take the horse and the sword and just ride out. If the guards tried to stop me, I'd show them the paper and say I was bringing everything to Sir Lionel. She had no notion what Sir Lionel looked like or where to find him, though. If they questioned her, they'd know. And then wheeze. Wheeze. As she chewed her lip, trying not to think about how it would feel to have her feet cut off, a group of archers in leather jerkins and iron helms went past, their bows slung across their shoulders. Ari heard snatches of their talk.
"Giants, I tell you. He's got giants, 20 foot tall, come down from beyond the wall, follow him like dogs."
"Not natural, coming on them so fast, in the night and all. He's more wolf than man. All them Starks are..."
"Shit on your wolves and giants. The boy'd piss his pants if he knew we was coming. He wasn't man enough to march on Harrenhal, was he? Ran to the way, didn't he? He'd run now if he knew what was best for him."
"So you say, but might be the boy knows something we don't. Maybe it's us ought to be running."
"Yes," Arya thought, "yes, it's you who ought to run. You and Lord Tywin and the Mountain and Sir Adam and Sir Aemry and stupid Sir Lionel, whoever he is. All of you better run, or my brother will kill you. He's a Stark. He's more wolf than man, and so am I."
"Weasel!"
Weasel's voice cracked like a whip. She never saw where he came from, but suddenly he was right in front of her.
"Give me that. Took you long enough."
He snatched the sword from her fingers and dealt her a stinging slap with the back of his hand.
"Next time, be quicker about it."
For a moment, she had been a wolf again, but Weasel's slap took it all away and left her with nothing but the taste of her own blood in her mouth. She'd bitten her tongue when he hit her. She hated him for that.
"You want another?"
Weasel demanded.
"You'll get it too. I'll have none of your insolent looks. Get down to the brew house and tell Tuffleberry that I have 2 dozen barrels for him. But he'd better send his lads to fetch them, or I'll find someone wants some worse."
Arya started off, but not quick enough for Wheeze.
"You run if you want to eat tonight,"
he shouted, his promises of a plump, crisp capon already forgotten.
"And don't be getting lost again, or I'll swear I'll beat you bloody."
You won't, Arya thought. You won't ever again. But she ran. The old guards of the north must have been guiding her steps. Halfway to the brewhouse, as she was passing under the stone bridge that arched between Widow's Tower and King's Pyre, she heard harsh, growling laughter. Rorg came round a corner with 3 other men, the manticore badge of Sir Aemry sewn over their hearts. When he saw her, he stopped and grinned, showing a mouthful of crooked brown teeth under the leather flap he wore sometimes to cover the hole in his face.
"Yoren's little cunt," he called her. "Guess we know why that black bastard wanted you on the wall, don't we?"
He laughed again, and the others laughed with him.
"Where's your stink now?"
Rorg demanded suddenly, the smile gone as quick as it had come.
"Seems to me I promised to fuck you with it."
He took a step towards her. Arion edged backward.
"Not so brave now that I'm not in chains, aren't you?"
"I saved you." She kept a good yard between them, ready to run quick as a snake if he made a grab for her.
"Owe you another fucking for that, seems like. Did Yowen pump your cunny, or did he like that tight little arse better?"
"I'm looking for Jakin," she said. "There's a message." Rorg halted. Something in his eyes. Could it be that he was scared of Jakin Hagar?
"The bathhouse Get out of my way!
Arya whirled and ran, swift as a deer, her feet flying over the cobbles all the way to the bathhouse. She found Jakin soaking in a tub, steam rising around him as a serving girl sluiced hot water over his head. His long hair, red on one side and white on the other, fell down across his shoulders, wet and heavy. She crept up, quiet as a shadow, but he opened his eyes all the same.
"She steals in on little mice feet, but a man hears," he said. "How could he hear me?" she wondered, and it seemed as if he'd heard that as well. "The scuff of leather on stone sings loud as war horns to a man with open ears. Clever girls go barefoot."
"I have a message." Arya eyed the serving girl uncertainly. When she did not seem likely to go away, she leaned in until her mouth was almost touching his ear.
"Wheeze,"
she whispered. Jakin Hagar closed his eyes again, floating languid, half asleep.
"Tell his lordship a man shall attend him at his leisure."
His hand moved suddenly, splashing hot water at her, and Arya had to leap back to keep from getting drenched. When she told Tuffleberry what Wheeze had said, the brewer cursed loudly.
"You tell Wheeze my lad's got duties to attend to, and you tell him he's a pux-ridden bastard too, and the Seven Hells will freeze over before he gets another horn of my ale. I'll have them barrels within the hour, or Lord Tywin will hear of it. See if he don't."
Wheeze cursed too when Arya brought back that message, even though she left out the pux-ridden bastard part. He fumed and threatened, but in the end he rounded up six men and sent them off grumbling to fetch the barrels down to the brew house. Supper that evening was a thin stew of barley, onion and carrots with a wedge of stale brown bread. One of the women had taken to sleeping in Wheeze's bed, and she got a piece of ripe blue cheese as well and a wing off the capon that Wheeze had spoken of that morning. He ate the rest himself, the grease running down in a shiny line through the boils that festered at the corner of his mouth. The bird was almost gone when he glanced up from his trencher and saw Arya staring.
"Weasel, come here!"
A few mouthfuls of dark meat still clung to one thigh.
"He forgot, but now he's remembered,"
Arya thought. It made her feel bad for telling Jakin to kill him. She got off the bench and went to the head of the table.
"I saw you looking at me."
Wheeze wiped his fingers on the front of her shift. Then he grabbed her throat with one hand and slapped her with the other.
"What did I tell you?"
He slapped her again, backhand.
"Keep those eyes to yourself, or next time I'll spoon one out and feed it to my bitch."
A shove sent her stumbling to the floor. Her hem caught on a loose nail in the splintered wooden bench and ripped as she fell.
"You'll mend that before you sleep,"
Wheeze announced as he pulled the last bit of meat off the capon. When he was finished, he sucked his fingers noisily and threw the bones to his ugly, spotted dog.
"Wheeze,"
Arya whispered that night as she bent over the tear in her shift.
"Dunson, Polliver, Raff the Sweetling,"
she said, calling a name every time she pushed the bone needle through the undyed wall. "The Tickler and the Hound Sir Gregor, Sir Aimery, Sir Ilion, Sir Meron, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei." She wondered how much longer she would have to include Wheeze in her prayer, and drifted off to sleep, dreaming that on the morrow, when she woke, he'd be dead. But it was the sharp toe of Weese's boot that woke her, as ever. The main strength of Lord Tywin's host would ride this day, he told them, as they broke their fast on oat cakes.
"Don't none of you be thinking how easy you'll be once my Lord of Lannister's gone," he warned. "The castle won't grow no smaller, I promise you that. Only now there'll be fewer hands to tend to it. You lot of sluggerbeds are going to learn what work is now. Yes, you are."
"Not from you,"
Arya picked at her oaten cake. Wheeze frowned at her as if he smelled her secret. Quickly, she dropped her gaze to her food and did not dare raise her eyes again. Pale light filled the yard when Lord Tywin Lannister took his leave of Harrenhal. Arya watched from an arch window halfway up the Wailing Tower. His charger wore a blanket of enameled crimson scales and gilded crinet and chamfron, while Lord Tywin himself sported a thick ermine cloak. His brother, Sir Kevin, looked near as splendid. No less than 4 standard-bearers went before them, carrying huge crimson banners emblazoned with the golden lion. Behind the Lannisters came their great lords and captains. Their banners flared and flapped, a pageant of colour, red ox and golden mountain, purple unicorn and bantam rooster, brindled boar and badger, a silver ferret and a juggler in motley, stars and sunbursts, peacocks and panther, chevron and dagger, black hood and blue beetle and green arrow. Last of all came Sir Gregor Clegane in his grey plate steel, astride a stallion as bad-tempered as his rider. Polliver rode beside him, with a black dog standard in his hand, and Gendry's horned helm on his head. He was a tall man, but he looked no more than a half-grown boy when he rode in his master's shadow. A shiver crept up Arya's spine as she watched them pass under the great iron portcullis of Harrenhal. Suddenly, she knew that she had made a terrible mistake. "I'm so stupid," she thought. Wheeze did not matter, no more than Chiswickhead. These were the men who mattered, the ones she ought to have killed. Last night she could have whispered any of them dead, if only she hadn't been so mad at Wheeze for hitting her and lying about the capon. Lord Tywin! Why didn't I say Lord Tywin? Perhaps it was not too late to change her mind. Wheeze was not killed yet. If she could find Jaqen, tell him. Hurriedly, Arya ran down the twisting steps, her chores forgotten. She heard the rattle of chains as the portcullis was slowly lowered, its spikes sinking deep into the ground, and then another sound, a shriek of pain and fear. A dozen people got there before her, though none was coming any too close. Arya squirmed between them. Wheeze was sprawled across the cobbles, his throat a red ruin, eyes gaping sightlessly up at a bank of grey cloud. His ugly, spotted dog stood on his chest, lapping at the blood, pulsing from his neck, and every so often ripping a mouthful of flesh out of the dead man's face. Finally, someone brought a crossbow and shot the spotted dog dead while she was worrying at one of Wheeze's ears.
"Damnedest thing," she heard a man say. "He had that bitch dog since she was a pup."
"This place is cursed," the man with the crossbow said.
"It's Aaron's ghost, that's what it is," said Goodwife Amabel. "I'll not sleep here another night, I swear it."
Arya lifted her gaze from the dead man and his dead dog. Jaqen H'ghar was leaning up against the side of the Wailing Tower. When he saw her looking, he lifted a hand to his face and laid 2 fingers casually against his cheek.
Jaime. The brooch that fastened Sir Brynden Tully's cloak was a black fish wrought in jet and gold. His ringmail was grim and grey. Over it he wore greaves, gorgets, gauntlets, pauldron, and pollains of blackened steel, none half so dark as the look upon his face as he waited for Jaime Lannister at the end of the drawbridge, alone atop a chestnut courser caparisoned in red and blue. "He loves me not." Tully had a craggy face, deeply lined and windburnt beneath a shock of stiff grey hair, but Jaime could still see the great knight who had once enthralled a squire with tales of the Ninepenny Kings. Honor's hooves clattered against the planks of the drawbridge. Jaime had thought long and hard about whether to wear his gold armor or his white to this meeting. In the end, he'd chosen a leather jack and a crimson cloak. He drew up a yard from Sir Brynden and inclined his head to the older man. "Kingslayer," said Tully. That he would make that name the first word from his mouth spoke volumes, but Jamie was resolved to keep his temper. "Blackfish," he responded. "Thank you for coming. I assume you have returned to fulfill the oaths you swore to my niece," Sir Brynden said. "As I recall, you promised Catelyn her daughters in return for your freedom." His mouth tightened. "Yet I do not see the girls. Where are they?" Must he make me say it? "I do not have them. Pity! Do you wish to resume your captivity? Your old cell is still available. We have put fresh rushes on the floor. And a nice new pail for me to shit in, I don't doubt. That was thoughtful of you, sir, but I fear I must decline. I prefer the comforts of my pavilion, whilst Catelyn enjoys the comforts of her grave. I had no hand in Lady Catelyn's death," he might have said, "and her daughters were gone before I reached King's Landing." It was on his tongue to speak of Brienne and the sword he'd given her, but the Blackfish was looking at him the way that Eddard Stark had looked at him when he'd found him on the Iron Throne, with the Mad King's blood upon his blade. "I came to speak of the living, not the dead, of those who need not die, but shall, unless I hand you Riverrun. Is this where you threatened to hang Edmure?" Beneath his bushy brows, Tully's eyes were stone. "My nephew is marked for death, no matter what I do. So hang him and be done with it. I expect that Edmure is as weary of standing on those gallows as I am of seeing him there." Ryman Frey is a bloody fool. His mama's show with Edmure and the gallows had only made the Blackfish more obdurate, that was plain. "You hold Lady Sybil Westerling and three of her children. I'll return your nephew in exchange for them." "As you returned Lady Catelyn's daughters?" Jamie did not allow himself to be provoked. "An old woman and three children for your liege lord. That's a better bargain than you could have hoped for." Sir Brynden smiled a hard smile. "You do not lack for gall, Kingslayer. Bargaining with oathbreakers is like building on quicksand, though. Cat should have known better than to trust the likes of you." "It was Tyrion she trusted in," Jamie almost said. "The imp deceived her, too. The promises I made to Lady Catelyn were wrung from me at sword point." "And the oath you swore to Ares?" He felt his phantom fingers twitching. "Ares is no part of this. Will you exchange the Westerlings for Edmure?" "No. My king entrusted his queen to my keeping, and I swore to keep her safe. I will not hand her over to a Frey noose. The girl has been pardoned. No harm will come to her. You have my word on that." "Your word of honor?" Sir Brynden raised an eyebrow. "Do you even know what honor is?" "A horse. I will swear any oath that you require. Spare me, Kingslayer." "I want to. Strike your banners and open your gates, and I'll grant your men their lives. Those who wish to remain at Riverrun in service to Lord Emmon may do so. The rest shall be free to go where they will, though I will require them to surrender their arms and armor. I wonder how far will they get unarmed before outlaws set upon them. You dare not allow them to join Lord Beric, we both know that. And what of me? Will I be paraded through King's Landing to die like Eddard Stark? I will permit you to take the Black. Ned Stark's bastard is the Lord Commander on the Wall." The Blackfish narrowed his eyes. "Did your father arrange for that as well?" "Catelyn never trusted the boy, as I recall, no more than she ever trusted Theon Greyjoy. It would seem she was right about them both. No, sir, I think not. I'll die warm, if you please, with a sword in hand, running red with lion blood." "Tully blood runs just as red," Jamie reminded him. "If you will not yield the castle, I must storm it. Hundreds will die. Hundreds of mine, thousands of yours. Your garrison will perish to a man. I know that song. Do you sing it to the tune of the Rains of Castamere? My men would sooner die upon their feet fighting than on their knees beneath a headsman's axe." "This is not going well." "This defiance serves no purpose, sir. The war is done, and your young wolf is dead. Murdered in breach of all the sacred laws of hospitality. Frey work, not mine. Call it what you will. It stinks of Tywin Lannister." Jamie could not deny that. My father is dead as well. May the father judge him justly. Now there's an awful prospect. I would have slain Rob Stark in the Whispering Wood if I could have reached him. Some fools got in my way. Does it matter how the boy perished? He's no less dead, and his kingdom died when he did. You must be blind as well as maimed, sir. Lift your eyes, and you will see that the dire wolf still flies above our walls. I've seen him. He looks lonely. Harrenhal has fallen. Seagard and Maidenpool. The Brackens have bent the knee, and they've got Titus Blackwood penned up in Raventree. Piper, Vance, Mouton, all your bannermen have yielded. Only Riverrun remains. We have 20 times your numbers. 20 times the men require 20 times the food. How well are you provisioned, my lord? Well enough to sit here till the end of days, if need be, whilst you starve inside your walls. He told the lie as boldly as he could and hoped his face did not betray him. The Blackfish was not deceived. The end of your days, perhaps. Our own supplies are ample, though I fear we did not leave much in the fields for visitors. We can bring food down from the Twins, said Jamie, or over the hills from the west, if it comes to that. If you say so. Far be it from me to question the word of such an honourable knight. The scorn in his voice made Jamie bristle. There is a quicker way to decide the matter. A single combat. My champion against yours. I was wondering when you would get to that, Sir Brynden laughed. Who will it be, Strongbore? Adam Marbrand, Blackwalder Frey? He leaned forward. Why not you and me, sir? That would have been a sweet fight once, Jamie thought. Fine fodder for the singers. When Lady Catelyn freed me, she made me swear not to take arms again against the Starks or Tullys. A most convenient oath, sir. His face darkened. Are you calling me a coward? No, I'm calling you a cripple. The Blackfish nodded at Jamie's golden hand. We both know you cannot fight with that. I had 2 hands. Would you throw your life away for pride? A voice inside him whispered. Some might say a cripple and an old man are well matched. Free me from my vow to Lady Catelyn, and I will meet you sword to sword. If I win, Riverrun is ours. If you slay me, we'll lift the siege. Sir Brynden laughed again. Much as I would welcome the chance to take that golden sword away from you and cut out your black heart, your promises are worthless. I would gain nothing from your death but the pleasure of killing you. And I will not risk my own life for that, as small a risk as that may be. It was a good thing that Jamie wore no sword, elsewise he would have ripped his blade out, and if Sir Brynden did not slay him, the archers on the walls most surely would. Are there any terms you will accept? He demanded of the Blackfish. From you? Sir Brynden shrugged. No. Why did you even come to treat with me? A siege is deadly dull. I wanted to see this stump of yours and hear whatever excuses you cared to offer up for your latest enormities. They were feebler than I'd hoped. You always disappoint, Kingslayer. The Blackfish wheeled his mare and trotted back toward Riverrun. The portcullis descended with a rush, its iron spikes biting deep into the muddy ground. Jamie turned Honor's head about for the long ride back to the Lannister siege lines. He could feel the eyes on him. The Tully men upon their battlements, the Freys across the river. If they are not blind, they'll all know he threw my offer in my teeth. He would need to storm the castle. Well, what's one more broken vow to the Kingslayer? Just more shit in the bucket. Jamie resolved to be the first man on the battlements, and with this golden hand of mine, most like the first of all. Back at camp, little Lou held his bridle, whilst Peck gave him a hand down from the saddle. Do they think I'm such a cripple that I cannot dismount by myself? How did you fare, my lord? Asked his cousin, Sir Davin. No one put an arrow in my horse's rump. Elsewise there was little to distinguish me from Sir Ryman. He grimaced. So now he must needs turn the red fork redder. Blame yourself for that, Blackfish. You left me little choice. Assemble a war council. Sir Adam, Strongbore, Forley Prester, those river lords of ours, and our friends of Frey, Sir Ryman, Lord Emmon, whoever else they care to bring. They gathered quickly. Lord Piper and both Lords Vance came to speak for the repentant Lords of the Trident, whose loyalties would shortly be put to the test. The West was represented by Sir Davin, Strongbore, Adam Marbrand, and Fawley Prester. Lord Emon Frey joined them with his wife. Lady Jenna claimed her stool with a look that dared any man there to question her presence. None did. The Frey sent Sir Walder Rivers, called Bastard Walder, and Sir Ryman's firstborn Edwin, a pallid, slender man, with a pinched nose and lank, dark hair. Under a blue lambswool cloak, Edwin wore a jerkin of finely tooled grey calfskin with ornate scrollwork, worked into the leather. "I speak for House Frey," he announced. "My father is indisposed this morning." Sir Davin gave a snort. "Is he drunk or just greensick from last night's wine?" Edwin had the hard, mean mouth of a miser. "Lord Jamie," he said, "must I suffer such discourtesy?" "Is it true?" Jamie asked him. "Is your father drunk?" Frey pressed his lips together and eyed Sir Ilan Payne, who was standing beside by the tent flap in his rusted mail, his sword poking up above one bony shoulder. My father has a bad belly, my lord. Red wine helps with his digestion." "He must be digesting a bloody mammoth," said Sir Davin. Strongbore laughed, and Lady Jenna chuckled. "Enough," said Jamie. "We have a castle to win." When his father sat in council, he let his captains speak first. He was resolved to do the same. "How shall we proceed?" "Hang Edmure Tully for a start," urged Lord Emon Frey. "That will teach Sir Brynden that we mean what we say. If we send Sir Edmure's head to his uncle, it may move him to yield." "Brynden Blackfish is not moved so easily." Carol Vance, the Lord of Wayfarer's Rest, had a melancholy look. A wine-stained birthmark covered half his neck and one side of his face. His own brother could not move him to a marriage bed. Sir Davin shook his shaggy head. "We have to storm the walls, as I've been saying all along. Siege towers, scaling ladders, a ram to break the gate. That's what's needed here."
"I will lead the assault," said Strongbore. "Give the fish a taste of steel and fire. That's what I say."
"They are my walls," protested Lord Emon, "and that is my gate you would break." He drew his parchment out of his sleeve again. "King Tommen himself has granted me—"
"We've all seen your paper, Nuncle," snapped Edwin Frey. "Why don't you go wave it at the Blackfish for a change?"
"Storming the walls will be a bloody business," said Adam Marbrand. "I propose we wait for a moonless night and send a dozen picked men across the river in a boat with muffled oars. They can scale the walls with ropes and grapnels and open the gates from the inside. I will lead them, if the council wishes."
"Folly," declared the bastard, Walder Rivers. "Sir Brynden is no man to be cozened by such tricks."
"The Blackfish is the obstacle," agreed Edwin Frey. "His helm bears a black trout on its crest that makes him easy to pick out from afar. I propose that we move our siege towers close, fill them full of bowmen, and feign an attack upon the gates. That will bring Sir Brynden to the battlements, crest and all. Let every archer smear his shafts with night soil and make that crest his mark. Once Sir Brynden dies, River Run is ours."
"Mine," piped Lord Emon. "River Run is mine."
Lord Carroll's birthmark darkened.
"Will the night soil be your own contribution, Edwin? A mortal poison, I don't doubt. The Blackfish deserves a nobler death, and I'm the man to give it to him."
Strongbore thumped his fist on the table.
"I will challenge him to single combat. Mace or axe or longsword makes no matter. The old man will be my meat."
"Why would he deign to accept your challenge, sir?" asked Sir Fawley Prester. "What could he gain from such a duel?
Will we lift the siege if he should win?
I do not believe that, nor will he. A single combat would accomplish naught."
"I have known Brynden Tully since we were squires together in service to Lord Daly," said Norbert Vance, the blind lord of Otranta. "If it please my lords, let me go and speak with him and try to make him understand the hopelessness of his position."
"He understands that well enough," said Lord Piper. He was a short, rotund, bow-legged man with a bush of wild red hair, the father of one of Jamie's squires. The resemblance to the boy was unmistakable.
"The man's not bloody stupid, Norbert. He has eyes, and too much sense to yield to such as these."
He made a rude gesture in the direction of Edwin Frey and Walder Rivers. Edwin bristled. "If my Lord Piper means to imply—"
"I don't imply, Frey. I say what I mean straight out like an honest man. But what would you know of the ways of honest men? You're a treacherous, lying weasel, like all your kin. I'd sooner drink a pint of piss than take the word of any Frey."
He leaned across the table. "Where is Mark? Answer me that. What have you done with my son? He was a guest at your bloody wedding."
"And our honoured guest he shall remain," said Edwin, "until you prove your loyalty to His Grace, King Tommen."
5 knights and 20 men-at-arms went with Mark to the Twins, said Piper. "Are they your guests as well, Frey?"
"Some of the knights, perhaps. The others were served no more than they deserved. You'd do well to guard your traitor's tongue, Piper, unless you want your heir returned in pieces."
"My father's counsels never went like this," Jamie thought, as Piper came lurching to his feet.
"Say that with a sword in your hand, Frey," the small man snarled. "Or do you only fight with smears of shit?"
Frey's pinched face went pale. Beside him, Walder Rivers rose.
"Edwin is no man of the sword, but I am, Piper. If you have more remarks to make, come outside and make them."
"This is a war council, not a war," Jamie reminded them. "Sit down, the both of you." Neither man moved.
"Now!"
Walder Rivers seated himself. Lord Piper was not so easy to cow. He muttered a curse and strode from the tent.
"Shall I send men after him to drag him back, my lord?"
Sir Davin asked Jamie.
"Send Sir Illyn," urged Edwin Frey. "We only need his head."
Carol Vance turned to Jamie.
"Lord Piper spoke from grief. Mark is his firstborn son. Those knights who accompanied him to the Twins were nephews and cousins all."
"Traitors and rebels all, you mean?" said Edwin Frey. Jamie gave him a cold look. "The Twins took up the young wolf's cause as well," he reminded the Freys. "Then you betrayed him. That makes you twice as treacherous as Piper." He enjoyed seeing Edwin's thin smile curdle up and die. "I have endured sufficient counsel for one day," he decided. "We're done. See to your preparations, my lords. We attack at first light." The wind was blowing from the north as the lords filed from the tent. Jamie could smell the stink of the Frey encampments beyond the tumblestone. Across the water, Edmure Tully stood forlorn atop the tall grey gallows with a rope around his neck. His aunt departed last, her husband at her heels.
"Lord Nephew," Emmon protested, "this assault on my seat. You must not do this."
When he swallowed, the apple in his throat moved up and down.
"You must not. I forbid it."
He had been chewing sour leaf again. Pinkish froth glistened on his lips.
"The castle is mine. I have the parchment, signed by the king, by Little Tommen. I am the lawful lord of Riverrun, and—"
"Not so long as Edmure Tully lives," said Lady Jenna. "He is soft of heart and soft of head, I know, but alive, the man is still a danger. What do you mean to do about that, Jamie?"
"It's the Blackfish who is the danger, not Edmure."
"Leave Edmure to me, Sir Lyle, Sir Illyn. Attend me if you would. It's time I paid a visit to those gallows."
The tumblestone was deeper and swifter than the Red Fork, and the nearest ford was leagues upstream. The ferry had just started across with Walder Rivers and Edwin Frey when Jamie and his men arrived at the river. As they awaited its return, Jamie told them what he wanted. Sir Illyn spat into the river. When the three of them stepped off the ferry on the north bank, a drunken camp follower offered to pleasure Strongbow with her mouth.
"Here, pleasure my friend," Sir Lyle said, shoving her toward Sir Illyn.
Laughing, the woman moved to kiss Payne on the lips, then saw his eyes and shrank away. The paths between the cook fires were raw brown mud mixed with horse dung and torn up by hooves and boots alike. Everywhere Jamie saw the twin towers of House Frey displayed on shield and banners, blue on grey, along with the arms of lesser houses sworn to the crossing. The Heron of Erenford, the Pitchfork of Hague, Lord Charlton's three sprigs of mistletoe. The arrival of the Kingslayer did not go unnoticed. An old woman selling piglets from a basket stopped to stare at him. A knight with a half-familiar face went to one knee, and two men-at-arms, pissing in a ditch, turned and sprayed each other.
"Sir Jamie!"
someone called after him, but he strode on without turning. Around him, he glimpsed the faces of men he'd done his best to kill in the Whispering Wood, where the Freys had fought beneath the direwolf banners of Robb Stark. His golden hand hung heavy at his side. Ryman Frey's great rectangular pavilion was the largest in the camp. Its grey canvas walls were made of sewn squares to resemble stonework, and its two peaks evoked the twins. Far from being indisposed, Sir Ryman was enjoying some entertainment. The sound of a woman's drunken laughter drifted from within the tent, mingled with the strains of a woodharp and a singer's voice. "I will deal with you later, sir," Jamie thought. Walder River stood before his own modest tent, talking with two men-at-arms. His shield bore the arms of House Frey with the colours reversed, and a red bend sinister across the towers. When the bastard saw Jamie, he frowned. "There's a cold, suspicious look, if ever I saw one. That one is more dangerous than any of his true-born brothers." The gallows had been raised 10 feet off the ground. Two spearmen were posted at the foot of the steps. "You can't go up without Sir Ryman's leave," one told Jamie. "This says I can." Jamie tapped his sword hilt with a finger. "The question is, will I need to step over your corpse?" The spearmen moved aside. Atop the gallows, the Lord of Riverrun stood staring at the trap beneath his feet. His feet were black and caked with mud, his legs bare. Edmure wore a soiled silken tunic striped in tally red and blue, and a noose of hempen rope. At the sound of Jamie's footsteps, he raised his head and licked his dry, cracked lips. "Kingslayer?" The sight of Sir Ilyn widened his eyes. "Better a sword than a rope. Do it, Payne." "Sir Ilyn," said Jamie, "you heard Lord Tully. Do it." The silent knight gripped his great sword with both hands. Long and heavy it was, sharp as common steel could be. Edmure's cracked lips moved soundlessly. As Sir Ilyn drew the blade back, he closed his eyes. The stroke had all Payne's weight behind it.
"No! Stop! No!" Edwin Frey came panting into view. "My father comes, fast as he can. Jamie, you must..."
"My lord would suit me better, Frey," said Jamie, "and you would do well to omit 'must' from any speech directed at me."
Sir Ryman came stomping up the gallows steps in company with a straw-haired slattern, as drunk as he was. Her gown laced up the front, but someone had undone the laces to the navel, so her breasts were spilling out. They were large and heavy, with big brown nipples. On her head a circlet of hammered bronze sat askew, graven with runes and ringed with small black swords. When she saw Jamie, she laughed.
"Who in seven hells is this one?"
"The Lord Commander of the King's Guard," Jamie returned with cold courtesy. "I might ask the same of you, my lady."
"Lady? I'm no lady. I'm the Queen."
"My sister will be surprised to hear that."
"Lord Ryman crown me his very self."
She gave a shake of her ample hips.
"I'm the Queen of Whores."
"No," Jamie thought, "my sweet sister holds that title too." Sir Ryman found his tongue.
"Shut your mouth, slut. Lord Jamie doesn't want to hear some harlot's nonsense."
This Frey was a thick-set man with a broad face, small eyes and a soft, fleshy set of chins. His breath stank of wine and onions.
"Making queens, Sir Ryman?" Jamie asked softly. "Stupid. As stupid as this business with Lord Edmure. I gave the Blackfish warning. I told him Edmure would die unless the castle yielded. I had this gallows built to show them that Sir Ryman Frey does not make idle threats. At Seagard, my son Walder did the same with Patrick Mallister, and Lord Jason bent the knee, but the Blackfish is a cold man. He refused us, so you hanged Lord Edmure?"
The man reddened. "My lord, grandfather!
If we hang the man, we have no hostage, sir.
Have you considered that?"
"Only a fool makes threats he's not prepared to carry out. If I were to threaten to hit you unless you shut your mouth, and you presume to speak, what do you think I'd do?"
"Sir, you do not understand."
Jamie hit him. It was a backhand blow, delivered with his golden hand, but the force of it sent Sir Ryman stumbling backward into the arms of his whore. "You have a fat head, Sir Ryman, and a thick neck as well. Sir Ilyn, how many strokes would it take you to cut through that neck?" Sir Ilyn laid a single finger against his nose. Jamie laughed. An empty boast. I say three. Ryman Frey went to his knees. I have done nothing but drink and whore. I know.